Welcome back into the David L. Gray Show, voicing truth and reason. Got an exciting show for you today. Jason Izzold is back on. And we're going to talk about the reasons why Tucker Carlson got fired. And we're going to talk about why Pope Francis has changed another tradition in the Catholic Church. This one is not a very long-standing tradition, but he changed it anyway. Got to talk about that. Maybe a lot of people are going to be angry about it. I don't know. We'll see. And Cardinal Supich, the one who I like to call America's Pope, whose archdiocese really ground zero for hell on earth, he does not want any pilgrims processing a validly consecrated Holy Eucharist, Jesus Christ, through his fiefdom. So Jason and I are going to talk about that. Please like, share, and sub. Do all that good stuff. Big shout out to all my patrons whose names are scrolling below, all those who signed up over on the Patreon, on my page on Patreon. If you're interested, please click on the link below. You can see how you can support the show. And as I like to say, thank you guys for paying the bills around here. Somebody has to. and also those who signed up for the YouTube membership. I really appreciate it. And hop over to St. Dominic's Media. Check out some of the courses I have over there, some of the books we have. And if you're a St. Dominic's member, if you join through Patreon, you become a lifetime member, so you have full access to even the paid courses that we have. Next week on Monday, make sure you check out the show on Monday next week. Have a few interesting guests that's coming on, but one of them I'm really excited about is going to be E. Michael Jones. A lot of you over the past 5 years, you guys kept jumping in the comment section. Hey, David, can you interview E. Michael Jones? Interview E. Michael Jones. Okay. So I'm finally going to interview Dr. E. Michael Jones. He'll be on Monday. I'm actually going to record a show tomorrow, I think. So, but I'm going to edit it just in case he, you know, says anything about, you know, the Jews. I'm not going to get Kanye West off of YouTube. YouTube just kicked me off for talking about the whatchamacallits. So I'm not going to, you know, get kicked off again that fast. So I'm going to, you know, clean up anything that goes wrong, and then I'll upload it on Monday. But let's get into this show with Jason Izzold. And it's going to be a really exciting show. Thank you for coming on in. Let's get into it.
Hovering over the skies of a post-Christian society, we have spotted a man with a donut in one hand and rosary beads in another.
Child, I'm about to whoop Satan's behind.
He is boldly proclaiming truth and reason like no rigid Catholic ever has before. The David L. Gray Show begins now.
Jason, welcome back into the David L. Gray Show, man. How you doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm doing well, man. See you out there in the backyard in Columbus,
Ohio. In the backyard? Yes. It's a beautiful day, blue skies.
Yeah.
Finally got some leaves on the trees. I'm loving it.
Yeah, look like you're getting ready for the NFL draft. I heard that Ohio State's quarterback kind of like failed IQ test, so I don't know where he's going to go.
You know what? I've been watching him play the last 2 years. He's a good quarterback. There's been guys that have aced that IQ test that have been bad quarterbacks, and there have been guys that haven't done well on that IQ quarterback.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a lot into it, but I guy that really made a big deal about it just has a thing about Ohio State, so
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah. We'll see, man.
But
we'll
I love see. That intro with the donut in one hand and the rosary beads in the other. I love it.
Yeah, you know I'm about that donut life. I don't know if you remember, but when Krispy Kreme opened up in Blacklick, I think maybe like 2014 or 15. I think you knew about this. Yeah, I stood in line all night to be like number 23, so I can get donuts for a year.
Yeah. You did. I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm all about that life, man.
All about them donuts, huh?
Yeah, man. So let's get into it. So I want to first get your thoughts on Tucker Carlson. I'm about to give you the top 10 reasons why people are saying they're fired, and I'm going to give you my conclusion, and we're going to compare okay. notes real quick, and then let's talk about
I got my notes right here.
And then let's talk about the Senate on synodality, and then let's talk about America's Pope, Cardinal Supich. All right,
America's Pope. All right, you got it.
All right, so as a lot of people know, Tucker Carlson, who is not a Catholic, you know, he calls himself an Episcopalian. He says in a humorous right way, but on his show, you know, for the past 9 years, especially probably like past 5 years, he really has said a lot of things that resonate with faithful Catholics, right? I mean, he mm-hmm. has a moral view and a worldview that a lot of us like. So mm-hmm. he was fired, found out on Monday, and that was the big news. It kind of overshadowed the gay guy over on CNN, Don Lemon, getting fired, which could have been a big story, but they got fired on the same day. So here's mm-hmm. the 10 reasons. Here's the first one. This is probably the only one I'm going to like add a comment on. The rest of them, I'll just run them down for you. So they're saying Tucker was fired because of the Dominion voting machines lawsuit, where Fox News had to pay about $787 million in his lawsuit, which I think was a discount. And here's why. Number one, Tucker wasn't mentioned in that lawsuit whatsoever, so it's a mm-hmm. bad read. But I do want to comment just on the fakeness of the lawsuit itself, because I think it was just a showcase, which means mm-hmm. it was just for show. And the reason why it had to be a showcase, well, the reason why they had to bring the lawsuit, Jason, was because they couldn't let this thing linger out there about the Dominion machines being fraudulent. They couldn't linger out there. Mm-hmm. So they had to bring this showcase against Fox News to buffer up the Dominion's credibility as legitimate mm-hmm. Counter of votes. So, but in defamation lawsuits, that's what happens. Defamation lawsuits, they say that you defamed us and we were damaged because of that. And so the way that you overcome a defamation lawsuit is that you prove that it was not defamation, is actually true. Now, for Fox mm-hmm. to prove that defamation would mean they would have to open up this whole new can of worms or old can of worms about where the votes counted. So they'll have to pull the machines, where the machines hacked. It'll be a whole bunch of they'll be relitigating the mm-hmm. whole counting thing if they were to prove, no, what we said about your machines was true, and here's the evidence. That could never happen. So this case could never go to court. So it's always going to be settled because it was just a show case. Okay. Now, let me run down the other reasons for you. That's number one. The second one, there was apparently a lawsuit by a former producer named Abby Grossman at Fox News that somehow implicated Tucker in being mean. All right, but lawsuits get settled. So I don't think that was one. The third one, Tucker was fired because he wanted to keep showing January 6th footage, but Fox would not let him. Tucker was fired because he was too critical of the U.S. military establishment, which was, and Tucker was becoming increasingly anti-war, especially anti-Ukrainian war. Number five, Tucker was fired because Fox finally relented to the pressure from Democrats and AOC, who have been calling for his head for the past 5 years. Number six, Tucker was fired because he just weirded out Rupert Murdoch because with his religious rhetoric, right? Number seven, Tucker was fired because he's increasingly anti-China and China leveraged Rupert Murdoch. Number eight, Tucker was fired because he's increasingly anti-Big Pharma, and Big Pharma leveraged Rupert Murdoch to fire him. Tucker was fired because he was going to be able to be used by Donald Trump in the 2024 election campaign. So Trump had access to Tucker. They couldn't allow that. So they fired him because of that. Kill Tucker, kill Trump. Tucker was fired because he's going to run for president in 2024. And finally, Tucker was fired because, according to Taylor Marshall, he was part of some Freemasonic plot. All right, so
I don't know
reasons. But my
reason, go ahead.
Okay, so here's where I'm at. I'm about to shoot you my reason real quick. Here's why Tucker was fired. I think it just really comes down to Occam's razor, Jason. That the most reasonable conclusion or explanation is probably it, and I think this is it. The assumption that Rupert Murdoch fired Tucker because Rupert Murdoch is an ideologue or that he has any principles whatsoever is kind of silly. Rupert Murdoch, he owns Fox Entertainment Network, right, which has some of the gayest shows you ever seen, right? Glee, Empire. And then he has over here Fox News, which, you know, aside from Tucker, you know, was just really just they parrot the GOP talking points, right? So I don't think he's principled at all. I think he's ego-driven. He's always has been. And so what happened was that Tucker got too big for Fox News. He became a cult figure. He became bigger than Rupert Murdoch. People associated Fox with Tucker. And so there just cannot be two kings. And so I think Rupert Murdoch fired Tucker just for that reason. There could only be one king at Fox News, and it was not going to be Tucker. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think you may be onto something there. You know, I lost you for about 30, 45 seconds. So I don't know what all you said, but I know you may have mentioned this or not, but apparently he referred to a senior executive at Fox News as the C word in a text message a few years back. Did you mention that?
Yeah, I mentioned the lawsuit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I lost you. My screen went black for a few seconds. And then the other things you already mentioned, the Dominion, Rupert Murdoch. There was also Abby Grossberg. Did you mention her too?
Oh, that was the same one. So that's two different things.
Yeah, she mentioned that he fostered a hostile work environment at Fox News.
Okay.
So you're right. I mean, he was huge. I mean, I know people who hate Fox News but love Tucker Carlson, and they would watch just for him. So it may have just been a thing where him and Rupert couldn't live in the same house together, you know? So. Okay. And unfortunately, you know, Rupert pays the rent, so everybody else he doesn't like is out. So,
yeah. And I think that might have happened with Bill O'Reilly, too. Remember Bill O'Reilly? He was kind of, he's pretty big, too. And they really kind of, but they say that the whole sex things with him, the whole, you know, that he's just like a pervy, kind of pervy at work. They said, you know, that was probably true. But, yeah, it is interesting, though. So Tucker hasn't really said anything. You know, he's been cited in public. He hasn't really said anything about why he's fired. It looks like he's just really just enjoying his life being retired. But how do you think this really impacts – does it impact Catholics as far as our worldview being out front in mainstream news?
I don't think it's going to affect us. I mean, you know, like you said, Tucker Carlson, he's not Catholic. He's Anglican or something similar to that. I did like the fact that, you know, he did speak up about faith quite a bit. And I think that bothered Rupert Murdoch as well, because he's not much of a like faith driven person. Yeah. I just thought it was funny that on Monday when all this news came out, the news was that Carlson and Fox News had agreed to part ways. And now it doesn't seem like it was so much of an agreement as it was a, you know, don't let the door hit you on the way out kind of thing.
Yeah. It's pretty unceremoniously dismissed, which is the worst way to get fired, man. I mean, give me some sort of party on the way out. Give me some donuts. I mean, that was...
Well, you know, maybe the reason that it was an agreement and not just straight up firing, bless you, is perhaps with the agreement to leave, he was offered some kind of payout or severance, where if they would have just fired him, like CNN did to that other guy, there may not be anything at all. So,
Yeah. So, the Senate on synodality.
What a stupid name. What a stupid name. Synod on synodality. We're going to have a synod to show you how to run a synod.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah, it's like practice for practice. It's
right.
It's funny. So that's going to be in Rome this year in October. It's in its final phase now. I think it started a few years ago. You know, they went around, talked to a lot of people who weren't Catholic about Catholic things. And so,
right.
And so Pope Francis, he's made this dramatic change from the vision of Paul VI. So Paul VI, after Vatican II, he instituted this synod as a permanent institution in the church to keep alive the spirit of Vatican II. So Pope Francis is now going to allow for the participation of 70 non-bishop members at the upcoming October gathering. 10 of each from the 7 Global Regional Bishops Conference, with the request that young people be included and that 50% of those named be women. So here's a task of the Senate for
those. Did you steal my notes? Because that's exactly what I have written.
Really?
Exactly. Verbatim.
So
we must have read the same article.
Great minds, man. Or maybe I did steal your notes. Right. But here's for those who don't know, you know, the Senate is, like I said, a Vatican II feature. And but the purpose of the Senate, the task of the Senate, is to, it sort of functions as like the Vatican's pastoral council. So it's like an advisory board. They don't, you know, they're not a teaching body. They're not magisterium. The Catholic Church is one holy Catholic and apostolic, not one holy Catholic, apostolic, and synodal, right?
Right. So,
and there, even if it was a teaching body, this would invalidate it because we don't get our teachings from lay people. So it cannot serve as a teaching function. But so what's supposed to happen, they meet, they decide upon some things, they vote upon some things, and afterwards, the Pope generally releases what's called a post-synodal apostolic exhortation, which doesn't really ever include any new teaching. It just reiterates some sort of pastoral message. So it's low on a totem pole as far as a magisterial document. So
I do have a question, though. If they're picking 70 lay people, 10 from each global region, how do I get my name on that list?
I mean, I'm
a lay person. Why can't they invite me?
You probably should reach out to your bishop, man. We probably need you there. And I'll reach out to the German bishops and see if they will include me. But I mean, what do you think, though? I mean, is this something or no thing? I mean, what is this?
Well, I think in the grand scheme of things, it's probably nothing. But the fact of the matter is here, we have an official church body who is going to be allowing non-bishops, lay people, to not only have an active participation in the synod, but actually have the ability to vote on what comes out of the synod. And I don't know that that's, I don't think that's what Paul VI had in mind when he created these synods. I know that's not what Holy Mother Church has in mind when it comes to, you know, the church being run by the hierarchy. It's not to be run by the lay people. This isn't a Novus Ordo parish where you have a parish council who tells the priest what to do.
Yeah.
You know? It's hard to say at this point because we haven't seen it come to fruition yet. I don't want to be one of those who like sounds the alarm over what could be nothing. I don't want to be that boy that cries wolf, you know? I think it's something to be on the lookout for, like pay attention to, see how it goes this time around, because unfortunately our church in the last 60 years hasn't been very good at making mistakes and then correcting those mistakes. They make mistakes and then they keep making them because it's stylish, you know? So, I don't want to be one of those that like sounds the alarm and says, this is the most horrible thing that's ever happened. Because we just don't know how it's going to turn out yet, but I am curious with the amount of young people that they want to have involved. I wonder who's picking those young people because, statistically more young people in the church today are conservative and they're traditional minded. And looking at the way the hierarchy is today, they're not going to want conservative, traditional-minded young people in that Senate. They're going to want boomers in there, you know, and they're people who think like boomers, you know, that's what they want. And they're not going to get that with young people unless they cherry pick liberal people who identify as Catholic because they grew up that way, but they haven't been to Mass in, since confirmation. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the only way they're going to get progressive young people who think the way they want them to think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Again,
yeah, and I mean, if this synod is supposed to mold how the church is going to be viewed and be run, you don't want people who don't go to church, you know, making that happen. You want people who are in Mass every week. You want people who hopefully are in Mass more than once a week. You know, you want people who believe in the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist. You don't want that 70% of Catholics who, you know, don't believe in the real presence. You want strong, solid Catholics. And if you got lay people, fine, but strong, solid lay people helping our bishops, helping our cardinals, helping our Pope run our church, you know? Granted, yeah. We are the, you know, we are the line level folks in the church here. We're the ones who are most affected by what the hierarchy is doing, and things like that. But so I think our thoughts, our views, our opinions, our feelings should at least be heard. But I don't know that lay people should be in a position where they're making like voting decisions on the future of the church.
Yeah. And I don't even trust. I like what you said though about the young people, because I think if they're, I don't know what the seven regions are, but I mean, there's some hope that from some regions, if they're not cherry picking, mm-hmm. You know, just people who are, you know, very leftist. I mean, there's some regions like the Philippines, some, you know, regions, some places in Africa, mm-hmm. some places maybe in Poland. So, I mean, I think there's some hope there that maybe there is mm-hmm. some good young people there. I don't like the, you know, I'm not, you know, I don't have any, obviously, problem with women. I have four daughters and a wife, obviously. but when we're talking about nuns, I mean, we can, the a lot of the bishops who we have today, the condition of our seminaries today, mm-hmm. a lot of these religious sisters who they put on these boards to pick who gets into some of our seminaries, they are part of the reason why we have such a crisis in our priesthood, because they mm-hmm. a lot of them were responsible for weeding out men who mm-hmm. are masculine, men who were traditional, men mm-hmm. who they thought, you know, I don't know how deep this goes, but some people think that some of the women who are choosing seminarians in a lot of our dioceses, they intentionally chose people who they knew were weak and cowards, because mm-hmm. they knew they would participate in collapsing the priesthood. And if mm-hmm. there's fewer priests, if we keep good potential priests out, then maybe the church will see us women as an opportunity to, you know, be priests. So I don't know how deep that goes, that machination. But these women, these nuns, who some of them may be now in a position of serving on this Vatican Pastoral Council, we're calling a synod, mm-hmm. Are the same ones who put an anchor in the boat and sunk it. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, that's one deep concern that I have. I don't know if I should trust the people who they're selecting.
And again, we won't know until we see who they are. It's almost mm-hmm. like back when Nancy Pelosi said, we won't know what's in it until we vote for it, right? Until we approve it. We won't know what's in it until we approve it. So... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, it's like, you know, this session coming up in October, you know, they're going to talk about the role of women in the church. They're going to talk about church governance. And they're also going to talk about the LGBT, or as you called it the other day, the Lima Golf Bravo Tango relationships.
Yeah.
I don't know if whatchamacallits are going to be in that discussion so much, but, you know, the whole idea of how the church and the LGBT community are able to relate to one another. And I know I said this when I was on a couple weeks ago. I'm not going to hate somebody because they sin differently than I do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those who are a part of that LGBT community, they are more than welcome to sit next to me at Mass. You know, they are more than welcome to worship with me every day of the week. As long as, like I do, they recognize that their sins are sins. And they seek atonement, you know, they seek reconciliation. You know, we all have bad habits. We all have lifestyles that we fall into. And it's making sure that we can atone for that and try to amend our lives. And, you know, as Jesus told, you know, the woman caught in adultery, go and sin no more.
Yeah. I'm with you. We had here in Germany at our parish here, where I'm, you know, I'm the pastoral coordinator. We had there's this person who clearly a biological male who did not hide the fact from me. Right. Mm-hmm. Came to daily Mass, and we had a good conversation, and mm-hmm. They started coming to the Sunday Mass with their mm-hmm. person who they're, you know, the government tells them that they're married to. And we had one incident. I think we had to tell them that, you know, you're not Catholic. You know, you should be going to receive communion, but they kept coming. And so
the German bishops allow that now, though, right? The German bishops allow anybody to receive communion.
Doesn't matter what they are. Exactly.
But right.
We're not going to do that on a U.S. base, though. So
No, we're not.
They'll let Protestants receive. So yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, like, yeah, come to Mass, and then I'm going to invite you to OCIA. We're going to get a lot, start the journey home.
Absolutely.
And no more. But, and I want to get to a couple comments. Carolyn says, she says that the Synod is political. Francis uses synods to put out his pet opinions. He is also attempting to change the ecclesiology of the church. The church is hierarchical. He wants it to be Presbyterian. And I commented on this before, Jason. I don't know if you noticed this, but a lot of what Francis has been doing since he's been Pope, he's been in some ways, he's quite, you know, he could be a tyrant, he'd be a dictator when it comes to some things, like, hey, mm-hmm. traditional Latin Mass, you know, we're gonna pull that in. I don't care what you say. Other things, mm-hmm. you know, he kind of wants to make it, you know, a whole sort of let's all come together and make the mm-hmm. decisions. So he's very much moved away from Vatican I. Vatican I sort of like he centralized the authority to Pope. Mm-hmm. It tried to restore the Pope in some ways before he was before the Vatican states mm-hmm. Sort of took away sort of the King Pope. It kind of say, I don't know, you're the Pope and you have authority, but Francis, he seems to reject the papacy in mm-hmm. some of those aspects. What have been your thoughts in a way Pope Francis has sort of delegated out some of his papal authority?
You know, that's, he has. And you went back to the traditional Latin Mass thing, and some of the stuff I've heard recently, I really believe this is more of a Cardinal Roach, like maybe over exerting his authority than it is Pope Francis, because Cardinal Roach is the one who wrote the last couple documents. And I know there's a rumor out there right now circulating in SSPX world that they're thinking of trying to ordain at least one new bishop. And there's a rumor that Pope Francis might allow them to do that. And if Pope Francis allows the SSPX to ordain a bishop, all those people the last 20 some years that have been calling the SSPX schismatic don't have a leg to stand on. Now, again, it's just a rumor. I don't know when this would ever happen or if it's true. I've seen, you know, like five or six different articles in different places about the possibility of Francis doing that. And I wouldn't be surprised if he did. A couple years ago, he gave the SSPX priests faculties to hear confession. He gave them the ability to witness marriages, you know? So that wouldn't be totally out of the realm of possibility for Francis. But you're right. At the same time, there are certain things he's very like dictator-like on. And then there's other things where, you know, he's, you know, very diplomatic or parliamentarian on, you know? Yeah. So.
Yeah. We're definitely going to see. We're going to definitely have to come back in November after they vote. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever happens in November, we're definitely
going to see what kind of document comes out. Yeah.
Yeah. We're definitely going to have to come back and probably come back again after probably the next year in 2025 when Pope Francis issues his post-synodal apostolic exhortation to see if there's actually mm-hmm. anything in there that's actually new. So it's going to be interesting to see because we've seen the documents, we've seen in church documents, this weird term, you know, the Lima Golf Bravo Tango thing. Plus, why is that in church documents? It's just weird terminology. You know, we're humans. Mm-hmm. We don't identify by our sexual preferences, right? It's weird.
Right, so, right.
so we're going to have to see, man, how that whole thing turns out, man. So talking to Jason Izold, he is a writer over at Catholic 365. He also has his Master of Arts degree in theology. He's an educator in Columbus, Ohio. He's a traditional Latin Mass Catholic. Happy to have him back on the show. This is the David L. Gray Show. In the Archdiocese of Chicago, this is an interesting story, Jason. America's Pope, I like to call him because he has more power in America than any other bishop just because who his friend is over in the Vatican. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's why I call him American's Pope. But one of my listeners had made a comment and called him Bishop Sewage, which I thought was interesting. I would, I probably wouldn't say that myself, but it's definitely funny. So the Archdiocese of Chicago, Jason, the Pillar published this story back on April 14th, said they're expected to restrict the exposition of the Holy Eucharist during the National Eucharistic mm-hmm. Pilgrimage that will traverse the Chicago region next year ahead of the Eucharistic Congress scheduled for July. So here's what's going on. So there's going to be Eucharistic Congress. I think the last one we had in the United States was maybe like 1926 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And these things happen across the world. You know, bishop conferences decide, hey, let's treat the Holy Eucharist seriously. Let's have a revival about this. I thought it was problematic, Jason, because the Holy Eucharist is intimately connected to the sacrament of penance and reconciliation. So I always thought if you're going to have a Eucharistic revival, you should have it the year mm-hmm. after you have a revival for the penance and reconciliation. All right, but that's
I mean, think about it. You're not supposed to receive the Eucharist unless you've been to penance first. You know, so the two are hand in hand.
Yeah. If we don't take confession seriously, we don't take that sacrament seriously, then we're not going to take the whole Eucharist seriously.
Not at all.
There's just so much other types of we can have a mass revival and teach people mm-hmm. how to kneel and receive the whole Eucharist reverently. I mean, that's another show we could have, you know, but there's going to be like four walking pilgrimages. There's four of them mm-hmm. that's like going to converge on Indianapolis in 2024.
Right.
There's one
right.
coming from Connecticut, another one coming from Texas, another one from Minnesota, one from San Francisco. They're all converging mm-hmm. on Indianapolis, right? That's mm-hmm. really cool. A lot of these processions are going to be walking, and I think that's amazing. These processions, mm-hmm. all of you know, I think that's really cool. I hope we get a lot of press from that. But once one of them, maybe from the San Francisco one, gets to Chicago region, Supich is like, no. And why? And why is he saying that, Jason? Tell us why.
Well, first of all, I think it's probably going to be the one from Minnesota that goes through Chicago. That makes the most sense on the way to Indianapolis. The one from San Francisco would be too far south to hit Chicago. But, you know, this is like part of
the lesson, by the way. When I was in high school,
I was a social studies teacher before I became a principal. So, yeah, but, you know, I mean, this really is like par for the course for Cardinal Supich. I mean, this is the kind of thing he does. He has a history of bucking all things Catholic. All right. As you know, last year, Supich shut down the Shrine of Christ the King in Chicago, which is a provincial home of the ICKSP here in the United States. And it was great because it wasn't great that he did this. What's great was this article I saw in 1 Peter 5 from September last year. It said, less than 7 years after the faithful of the Shrine of Christ the King Sovereign Priest had lost their church to a blaze, another type of inferno seemed ready to swallow up their community. This blaze, specifically Blaise Cardinal Supich, was rumored to be dealing a death blow to the burgeoning apostolate of the ICKSP. And that was Trevor Alcorn over at 1 Peter 5 that wrote that. I thought that was just very poetic that they lose their church to a blaze, and then Blaise Supich comes in and just, you know, shutters the ICKSP in Chicago. Supich allows pro-abortion politicians to receive the Eucharist in his archdiocese.
Yeah.
When he was the bishop in Spokane, Washington, he prohibited priests from praying in front of abortion clinics. And in 2021, he ordered priests in the diocese of in the Archdiocese of Chicago to stop publicly praying the St. Michael prayer and Hail Mary after Mass. Yeah. You know, traditional Catholic practices, he shut that down. So this just seems like it's par for the course for Supich. You know, I don't get though how he wants more of a focus on the Mass, but even his understanding of the Mass is not, it's not a good understanding. You know, he doesn't understand that the Eucharist or the Mass itself is Eucharistic, you know?
Right. I think the pillar said that Supich has argued that an emphasis on adoration could distract from the catechesis about the importance of the Mass. If it was anybody but Supich, I would hear that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I think later in the article, he's also talking about something about the community aspect of.
Yeah, he did. I actually have it here in my notes. He says that Supich emphasized a communal nature of Christian worship in the Mass. And I mean, yes, we come together as a body of believers and, you know, we worship, we celebrate, we have Mass together as a community. However, the Mass, even though it's a community action, the sacrifice of the Mass is the action of the priest at the altar. You know, it's the action of confecting or consecrating the Eucharist. Mass is Eucharistic. And as you know, I'm not a very big fan of Vatican II. But there's one thing that the fathers at the council got right. And that was that the Eucharist is the source and summit of the Christian life. And that comes from paragraph 11 in Lumen Gentium. So if the Eucharist is the source and summit of the Christian life, then we as Catholics, we need to have an understanding of what the Eucharist is. We need to have this piety, this reverence for the Eucharist.
Yeah.
And I'm not at all opposed to like this Eucharistic conference that they want to do. I think it could be great. I love adoration. When I was still a member at St. Matthew's over in Gahanna, where, you know, you and I were there together, I frequented the perpetual adoration chapel once it was built. You know, I was in there at least once a week, sometimes more. You know, I'm a very big proponent of Eucharistic adoration. At least once a month, I participate at St. Leo's with our Holy Name Society, you know. Yeah. And especially in a society where less than 30% of Catholics believe in the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist, I think a Eucharistic revival is needed here in the United States. And I think if more Catholics truly understood what the Eucharist was about, they would have a better appreciation for and understanding of the Mass. Because again, if you don't believe that Christ is truly present, you know, body, blood, soul, and divinity in the Eucharist, why even go to Mass in the first place? You know, you might as well go to a Pentecostal service or a Lutheran service or, you know, a Baptist service. If you don't believe that the Eucharist is truly Christ, why are you at Mass? If we're going to be more Mass centric, more liturgy centric, I think we still have to start with the Eucharist. You know?
Yeah, I think that's true. And if it had been anybody else but Supich who had raised the concern about it can distract from the importance of catechesis about the Mass, you know, I would have listened to, because I think you clearly articulated how they're connected. You said if you don't believe in a real presence, then, you know, what does Mass do? You're basically a Protestant at that point if you don't believe in a real presence. So you have to understand a relationship between the two. If it wasn't America's Pope saying this, I could hear the concern that, because I do think sometimes, because I see this myself, that that sometimes I do notice that I will see people in adoration with a very pious approach towards the real presence of Christ. But they'll do that instead of going to Mass. I don't know what percentage of the people do that, but this is a danger that I see in the privatization of the real presence. This idea of, it's a Protestant idea of, I'm going to have my own personal relationship with Jesus Christ outside of the Mass. That's Protestantism, outside of Christ's church. I'm going to have a relationship with Jesus Christ. And so I do see a danger there. I don't think you can adore Jesus too much. I really love, it is a Western practice. You know, Eastern Catholics don't, you know, they don't, because they have intention when you receive Holy Eucharist and Eastern rites. You know, they drop the flesh of Christ into the blood and they give it to you at the same time. So they don't have
You receive it on the little spoon. Yeah,
exactly. So they don't have the separation of two species as we do. So it is very Western. Right. And I get it. And if it wasn't anybody but Supich as well, I would hear this concern that procession in liturgy is, all processions are intended to process towards the altar, to the sacred space, because as the church teaches, the altar is Christ himself, and the altar of his sacrifice. So the altar is so essential to what Catholicism is. So every procession in the Mass should be heading that way, whether it's us receiving communion, whether it's the opening procession, whether it's the altar servers, everything is headed in that direction towards the holiest place in the universe. Some churches, you may have been in these churches that do this completely wrong, Jason. You may have seen churches where at communion, when it's time to receive communion, they'll have lines that head to the bathroom or you know, they head in a different
direction. Yeah.
Right. And they think it's convenience. You're like, oh, let's break this line up and you guys head that way. It's doing liturgy completely wrong. And so if it's anybody but Supich, I would hear that about procession outside of the liturgy. Like, what are we doing? But I can't hear these critiques because, as the reasons you mentioned, this guy allowed for Lori Lightfoot to receive communion. He is the bishop, archbishop, the cardinal of a diocese that's like, Jason, they just had kids in downtown molesting visitors. I mean, just doing crazy. This city is one of the most violent cities in the country.
If any
city has Christ processing through it, It should be Chicago. They should take
this absolutely
team on the South Side.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'll tell you, I agree. And you know, you talk about everything processing to the altar, and with this Eucharistic procession going toward Indianapolis, Indianapolis is going to be the altar for this conference. So all these processions are moving toward the altar. And I think the Eucharist needs to be exposed in Chicago. I think that would do wonders for the city. You know, I'm actually looking forward to June 8th here in the Diocese of Columbus. Our bishop, Earl Fernandez, is going to be joining us at St. Leo's for the second time this year, and he's going to be leading our Eucharistic procession through Marion Village, a very progressive neighborhood on the south side of Columbus. You know, and we're gonna process that Eucharist in a monstrance under a canopy, you know, all around that neighborhood with our bishop leading the way, you know. And oh, that's beautiful. You can't, in my opinion, you can't have a Eucharistic procession and not expose the Eucharist, you know. It's kind of like, you know, if you sit outside for too long in the sun, you get a sunburn, right?
Right.
So how much more powerful is the Son of God being exposed to people who may not be exposed to it very often? As you can tell, I'm very fair-skinned. I spend too much time in the sun. I get burnt. So why not give these people in Chicago an S-O-N burn? Give them a sunburn with the Son of God, you know?
Yeah, I like that. And so Supich, I think he is going to have some procession after a mass that he offers. But yeah, like you're saying, he doesn't want this national procession to have a monstrance exposed. He said you guys can process, you can march.
Carry it in the ciborium.
Yeah, it has to be kept in the ciborium.
That doesn't make sense. The whole point of a procession is for it to be seen. You know, for the Eucharist to be seen. And you can't see it when it's in the ciborium, you know. So if I'm the planner for this procession, I'm going to do one of two things. I'm either going to say, you know, to hell with you, and I'm going to bypass Chicago, or I'm going to say to hell with you, Supich, and I'm going through your city anyway. And what is he going to do? Have him arrested? He has no authority over the law.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was thinking about that earlier as well. I would probably, if I was an organizer, I'm still going to have a canopy. This is like one of America's largest cities. I've got the canopy out.
Third or fourth largest city in the country. Yeah. I think New York, L.A., Chicago, and then Houston. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, stop me. Jesus is out. Stop us. Like, what are you going to do? But it's a right. Supich. So it's Supich. I mean, because he knows this is, I mean, this may be too nefarious, right? But Supich knows this is a valley consecrated host that's processing through the city. If he's, if he's somebody that truly hates Jesus, I think only Jesus, somebody who hates Jesus Christ doesn't want a procession. Who is against a procession that loves Christ? So
I don't know.
So maybe the one that he's processing with, maybe it's been consecrated by Father Flager. It's not even valid.
Who knows?
It may not even be valid the way he's processing with. And so he's scared of one that's a valid consecrated.
Maybe.
I don't know.
You know who else is afraid of validly consecrated hosts? Satan.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe they're in cahoots. I don't know. I forgive me. I shouldn't have said that. He is a cardinal in our church. I pray for the man.
Yeah.
But he is definitely confused. Him, Cardinal Gregory, a lot of those guys, they're confused people, and we need to pray for them.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, these are not good tidings. These are not good things that we're seeing. We kind of know from the lives of the saints as Catholic. We know what a person whose life is on the ascension to Calvary. Mm-hmm. We know what their life looks like. I mean, we have a litany of examples. We say them every Easter vigil. We know what holiness looks like. We call out the names. It's kind of like, you know, Black Lives Matter, you know, say the name. You know, they say that all these people who died names, but we have our own say their name, and we do it every Easter vigil. We even do it during every Mass. We say the names of the holy people, so we know what holiness looks like. And so I think what we're saying is that based upon Super's actions, Bishop Cardinal Super's actions, he just doesn't his actions do not indicate that he's in that communion of people that we know do holy things. And this
absolutely
is weird. This is weird.
It is.
So not to, you know, condemn him in any way, you know, we're just saying this is weird.
You're right, it is. And we're to a point where we're like speechless. We don't know what else to say about him, you know. And you know, we should be singing the praises of our prelates. You know, we should be, you know, jumping for joy when we talk about all of our bishops, all of our archbishops, you know, all of those people who are in a spot of authority in our church. And unfortunately, we're at a point right now where we can't do that very often.
Yeah. We have a few more minutes. Jason J., this is the David L. Gray Show, voicing truth and reason. If you're listening to the audio platforms, please drop me a comment on iTunes. And if you're watching the show on all the platforms that we're live streaming, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, drop me a like, drop me a share, drop me a sub. Got Jason Izold here. I think he'll be back in a couple weeks. And we've got a few more minutes here. I want to get to some questions, Jason. Carolyn had dropped an interesting comment. I've seen some comment like this on Twitter. I think it was yesterday. I think she's a Sedevacantist. But I think I follow her for some reason. But she's talking about you shouldn't receive Holy Eucharist. You shouldn't receive communion in a Novus Ordo. I thought that was weird.
But go ahead. Well, what Carolyn says here is that you shouldn't receive them from a Eucharistic minister. Well,
yeah, first of all,
there's only one Eucharistic minister, and that is the priest, the one who can confect the Eucharist. Yeah. What she's talking about is an extraordinary minister of Holy Communion. Mm. And in the traditional rites of the church, the priest was the ordinary minister, and the deacon was the extraordinary minister. In the Novus Ordo rite, both the priest and deacon are considered ordinary ministers. And then you have your lay extraordinary ministers of Holy Communion. Anytime I've had to go to a Novus Ordo, and even when I went all the time, I would only go to the priest line.
Jason, what do you do? Mm-hmm. You're sitting there at Mass. Mm-hmm. And Father, you think he's going to get on this side of, you know, the line, but he's on the other side. So your pews are on the side of the EM.
I skip the line. I go over to the priest line.
You're a line
jumper? Yeah, in fact, I'm a line jumper. I'm a line jumper all the way. In fact, I was at Mass at a parish down in the Archdiocese of Cincinnati 5 or 6 years ago. And I was sitting where I thought the priest would be, and he wasn't there. And he must have seen me jump lines, because when I got up to him, first, he gave me a really dirty look. Then, when I knelt to receive on the tongue, he looked at me and said, "We don't do that here." And then I pretty much cited a couple of paragraphs of the indult that allows for reception in the hand and said, "You must allow someone to receive in the traditional manner if they wish to do so." And he kind of got snarky with me, but he eventually gave it to me. I was going to kneel in front of him.
In line? You say this?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
You're a beast.
Call me what you want, but I have a right as a Catholic to receive in the traditional manner. And I was not going to let some uppity priest deny me that right.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. I am a line jumper, and I will jump to the line wherever the priest is.
I'm not a line jumper.
I can avoid that by not going to the Novus Ordo.
That's true. You can avoid all that by going to the Novus Ordo, or going to even a Novus Ordo that has kneelers, you know, like St. Patrick's or something like that.
Yeah. Holy Family, St. Patrick's, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not a line jumper, Jason, but what I do when I'm at a parish I'm not familiar with, like, where, you know, usually priests will have habits. He's always on the left or the right, you know, or you're at a, you know, a Novus Ordo where there's two priests. And let me just say this first. I don't know why. I don't know what's the problem with waiting to receive communion. I don't know why there can't be just one priest anyway. I don't know. Where do you have to go? Why the hurry? Why do you need eight? First of all, I don't get that anyway. But so I'm not a line jumper. But what I'll do, I'll sit all the way in the back, or I'll just wait till everyone else goes, right? Until I figure out the situation. I'm like a quarterback, right? I'm reading the defense. What is this? Number two is a cover one.
What cover zero?
Right. Did the quarterback drop? You know, I'm just right. You know, I'm filling out the whole situation. So that's what I do. But I'm not I'm not a line jumper though.
Right. I'm not even ashamed to admit it. I'm a line jumper. And I'm actually gonna be taking a vacation this summer. I'm going to be down in Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic, and they had a traditional Latin mass on the first Sunday of every month. And so I planned my trip around that Latin mass. And I just found out that because of Tradiciones Custodes, the Archbishop in Santo Domingo is no longer allowing them to do that first Sunday of the month traditional Latin mass. So I'm going to go to mass at the cathedral in Santo Domingo, and I'll probably do what you do. I'll sit in the back and I'll read the defense before I get up for communion, because I'll have to go to Novus Ordo because there's not a traditional Latin mass in the whole country. So I'll have no choice. And I know some traditionalists who will say, if you can't go to a Latin mass, don't go to mass at all. And I don't feel that way. I do believe that we have a Sunday obligation to be at Mass. You know, that is the first precept of the church. Go to Mass on Sunday. So I will be there. And I will read the defense before I get up for communion. So thanks for the advice.
Yeah. So you're going to, so all in the whole Dominican Republic, there's not a,
not right now. Now, again, I'm going in August. So they might start it back up if, you know, but as of right now, there's no Latin mass in the whole country.
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty amazing. Yeah. 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 I'm with you though. Got to fulfill the Sunday obligation. You know, the church doesn't make an exception for that. It's hard though, man. I remember I got to do a mass nightmare on this one day. I was in Mallorca, Spain. And Jason, you wouldn't believe the Novus Ordo. I don't even know what it was. It was a Catholic church. I know that much. But the liturgy, it got so bad that I knew that this was not a valid mass. It just got it got that bad. At some point in time, I just look up and there's like a bunch of kids around the altar. Father called. You know how you're in a different country. You don't understand the language. But you know how the mass is supposed to flow. You know when
right.
None of that was there, and so I knew that I wasn't going to fulfill my Sunday obligation. I knew. So at some point in time, I pull out my camera. I said, "I got to record this." And then, you know, Felicia's next to me, and she's elbowing me, you know, because she thought I was being rude and everything, but I wasn't at a mass, so I felt completely comfortable recording what was going on. Right,
this is right, right.
And so, So it was, but yeah, you gotta try. So, and the best you can do sometimes, if you're in a foreign country, you like read the reviews, you know, Google or whatever.
Right,
it's hard, man. It's really well. Hard.
I'm hoping that at the cathedral, it should be fairly decent. And also, this is the oldest cathedral in the New World, so I'm hoping there's some credence there as well. So While I'm down there, I'm also going to visit La Isabella, which is up in the north. And that is where the first Catholic Mass in the New World was said on January 6th, of all dates, believe it or not, 1494.
Wow. 1494.
2 years after Columbus first came to the New World, the first Mass was said in La Isabella. And the reason why it took like a little over a year was because, you know, Columbus made a couple trips back and forth. So, and I'm also going to visit his tomb down in Santo Domingo as well. So,
I never knew where he's buried. I never even thought about.
Yeah, that. he was actually buried in the cathedral in Santo Domingo until 1992, when they celebrated the 500th anniversary. They built a shrine. It's called the Columbus Lighthouse, but it's more of this real large building, and his tomb was moved to that. So I'm kind of looking forward to checking that out too.
That's really cool, man. I didn't know that. Thanks for that information. This is David L. Gray Show. We're gonna wrap up now. We had Jason Izzold on. If you want to find out more about him, you just type his name into the Google, or better yet, just hop over to Catholic 365. Check out all his articles there. But he's a regular guest on the David L. Gray Show. So hope to see you in a couple weeks. Jason, see what we have to talk about.
I'll be happy to come back.
All right. But until then, and until next time, everyone, thanks for coming in. Appreciate all the comments. And let me get to this comment. Brandon says, did Felicia break your ribs? I can see it now. Yeah, Brandon, she was. It was this.
Put that camera down.
It was that. Right there. Blessings are slow to you and to yours. Thanks a lot.